Hey, this is John Karras, and tonight's episode is brought to you by the Police Benevolent Association. For those who don't know, this association is very important. It's to ensure the protection of our police officers' rights and freedoms. It encourages, proposes, and supports legislation for the betterment of working conditions and opposes legislation detrimental to the police officers. So, support the Benevolent Association. It's to uphold the Constitution of the United States of America and the state of New York. Thank you. Okay, welcome back to Warriors, Weapons, and Challenging the Authority. I'm your host, John Karras. We are joined back with fellow veteran Jack Minow, and we're continuing our discussion on the life and times of Tommy Minow. Now, to recap from our last time, we had a conversation with Jack. Jack pretty much came from a predominantly Irish family growing up in Inwood, New York. Both Jack and his two other brothers, his older brother went into the Navy, and Jack and Tom were drafted into the Army. Jack went to Fort Riley, Kansas, and he was communications in that communications field. Whereas Tommy went into the medical field and he got his initial training in Fort Sam Houston before he went over to Vietnam. Now, hey, Jack, first and foremost, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, John. Good talking to you.
Okay. I know this this next one might be a little difficult to deal with, but I'm sure you remember. But, I mean, do you remember the day when you were at Fort Riley when you heard about the news about Tommy?
I guess it was the... got killed on the 21st, so maybe it was the 22nd. And it was funny, I was in a class for crypto security.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And all of a sudden they call me out, and it happened once or twice before. In those days they would call you out and buttonhole you and ask you if you wanted to, they'd give you X amount of dollars if you'd re-up for a year, or I think it was a year. So I figured, I figured that's what it was when I got out, and then they told me that Tommy had been killed. So
was it your company commander, or was it
no,
else?
I think it was a maybe the first sergeant.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
Normally the first sergeant would do it. Yeah, so it had to be a difficult time.
Yes,
yeah.
It was. And then I got a... somebody from the... It was... You know, you always hear these bad things about, not bad things, but Red Cross doesn't usually get a lot of good play, you know.
Right.
All of a sudden, a guy from Red Cross shows up, and I'm, or maybe he called me in the office. They said, speak to this guy. So he says, sorry to hear what happened. How are you getting back? I said, I don't know, you know, I don't have any money on me. He says, go to the airport, and there'll be a ticket waiting for you back into New York. So they picked it up, and by the time I got back, Tommy hadn't arrived in New York. So I think I had a 7-day leave, and they contacted me in New York again, Red Cross, and asked me what's going on. I told them I'm going to need more time, and they said, don't worry about it. We'll contact Fort Riley and tell them what's going on, and you get another 7 days.
So they worked out the logistics for
yeah.
you. So when you got notified at Fort Riley, I mean, did you get a chance to call home and talk to your parents about it? Or was it something that happened so quickly?
You know, in those days, it was hard to communicate. You know, it's not like the cell phone
yeah.
days. I think my father spoke to me in Fort Riley. And and then, like I said, the Red Cross had a ticket waiting for me. And we got back into LaGuardia in New York.
Yeah, the Red Cross is always good that way, especially helping out in those times of needs and all that stuff. So let me ask this, Tom. You get back, and it's a bad time, and you know it's obviously very sad news and all that. I mean, what could you what did the Army? I mean, what kind of information did they give you as far as what happened over there, or any of the details with Tommy?
It was all vague at the beginning, you know. Killed in action in an ambush, you know. We didn't get all the details till later on.
Okay.
And of course, it was a closed casket, which was upsetting also. So
yeah, it is. Yeah.
But in those days, it's now it's like a one-day wake. In those days, it was a three-day wake. So that even that drags everything out, you know, 3 days.
Very sorrow, yeah. Very difficult times, yeah. So Tom came back, I mean, from what you know. I mean, they flew him back. Do you remember the process? I mean, did he come back to, like, the LaGuardia or was it Kennedy or anything like that? Was
I would say Kennedy, and then the funeral parlor brought the body back to the funeral home, and then... you know, it was a 3 day wait, and then there was a, you know, big mass. In a neighborhood we lived in, it was a big church, and maybe it held 600 people, the Good Shepherd Church in Inwood.
The Good Shepherd Church, yeah. Okay, you answered my question there, okay.
And of course, it was packed, and people were outside and on the side doors, you know, looked like everybody in the neighborhood showed up. So,
right. And that should be a very, obviously, a very sorrow time. So I gather a lot of the old friends. Yeah, a lot of the old friends and the people from the neighborhood coming and, to pay respects.
And a big, we have a big family, so there was a lot of relatives and, you know, people from out of town coming in. So.
Right. So we worked through that, and that's obviously a very, you know, a sad time. So if you don't mind me asking, where was Tommy eventually laid to rest?
Up in Gate of Heaven.
Oh, Gate of
That's
Heaven?
Up
okay.
In Westchester.
Okay. Yeah, I just want to explain that to some of the audience up in Westchester and so forth. Okay. So you're back. You're going through this. It's a difficult time. So what you hear as far as with you, Jack, with your military duty with Fort Riley, what did you hear that was going to happen, how that your plans were going to work out?
Well, I got back there, and I showed up at roll call early in the morning.
And, okay.
You know, it's funny how some guys are just no empathy in them whatsoever. So they call my name out and here, you know, when it was a E7, I remember, he says, I guess we're going to have to call you up you know, you've been AWOL for 7 days, you know?
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
So you almost feel like grabbing a guy by the throat, you know, and I said...
Yeah, I don't blame you. You know, now, I'm just... curious at the time, maybe if he didn't know why you were away at the time, who knows?
No, he did. It's difficult. You know, and
very insensitive move.
Yeah, when I was in the office getting everything together and getting out of there, he said to me, well, what are they going to do? They're going to bury the body in Vietnam and they're going to bring it back. You know, just...
Oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, for lack of a better word, it's okay. They got assholes in the military just as well.
Well, I guess.
You know, obviously, this was one of them.
Not just the military, there's assholes everywhere, I guess. You know.
Yeah, agreed.
You know, just, you know, try to be nice to everybody and it pays off in the long run. Feel better. That's how I approach it, anyway.
Agreed. So you get back to Fort Riley, you start to settle in. What did you start hearing, as far as I know, you mentioned before in the last podcast about they were working on trying to get your compassionate reassignment.
Right, and I was through basic training and advanced training, and it was assigned to a regular battalion. And then the rumor was they were going over to Vietnam in a couple of months.
Okay.
You know. So by that time, I had, you know, come back to Fort Dix. So I think.
And I think you're pretty much in the same boat, which what happens for many military families. Typically, when a sibling dies in combat, the Army is, you know, even the Marines and so forth, there is some play there where they try to avoid sending a sibling back over to the same combat zone.
Well, you think of the, what was it, the seven Sullivan brothers that were all on the same ship?
Yeah, the Sullivan brothers also... very reminiscent of the movie Saving Private Ryan.
Sure.
That was another situation. Very happened. So now you get reassigned. I mean, Fort Dix. I mean, what did you know when you were getting ready to go to Fort Dix? I mean, did you have a choice where you were going, or did the Army try to make that choice?
No,
for
they
you?
Sent me to an MP battalion, the 519th MP battalion. So I
the 519th. So very famous battalion. Yep.
Report in and. My MOS was a pole lineman, you know, in communications. So
yes,
they said,
yes, okay.
We'd like to change MOS to an MP. So I want to know part of that. So I said, well, if I have a choice.
You didn't want to. So I gather you didn't want to follow your dad's footsteps in law enforcement, huh?
Yeah, I just thought it might be an easier route. And the other thing I was thinking, I was an apprentice, and I was going to, when I got out, I was going to go back to, you know, the union as an electrician. So I thought...
Local three. Yep.
So my MOS might be helpful when I get out.
I can understand that.
But anyway, I got assigned to the, as a communications guy, taking care of the radios on the Jeeps and stuff. So, you know, a little bit of training with that, with first and second line echelon maintenance, you know. And things were crazy in those days. This was 1967. So, there were a lot of guys that were going AWOL. So they started they called it a prison chaser company. And I got assigned to that. And Fort Dix is a big base, and there's a bus station there. And that's where this prison chaser company was located. So I was assigned there. And then every day buses would come in with guys that they called AWOL.
All right, you answered my question right there. So prison chase is pretty much for many who were drafted and now are looking to sort of like, you know, jump bail, so to speak, or gone AWOL.
You know,
wow. Okay.
A guy would be in New York City and maybe gets locked up for something minor, and they check his ID
locally.
And they realize he's been AWOL for months, so they send him back, you know, when they'd wind up in Fort Dix, and then you'd have to escort the guy. They're in a cage, and then each one of us would grab a guy. And we had a .45 with a clip in it, and you bring him to an officer, and then they'd say to him, are you going to return to duty? And if he said yes, they would restrict him to this company area until all the paperwork went through. If he said no, then there was a big jail down there, and they would take him. Then I would have to escort him to the jail, you know?
Gotcha. So that had to be some interesting times. You must have come across some interesting characters.
Well, the more interesting one was there might have been a slight riot in the jail. So they didn't have enough guards. So now they took us prison chasers, and we had to live in a barracks all night long with these prisoners, you know, which was, I guess, the lowest form of... incarceration, prison jail, but it was still pretty mind-boggling, you know.
I would say so. Yes.
Well, you know, coming from the streets of New York, you know, you had to project yourself a certain way that you're a no-nonsense guy, and that helped, you know.
Right. That makes sense. Yeah. So you're down there doing that duty, and then I think you mentioned also. You also did some duty, I believe, down at Fort Meade, and then you guys responded down to some of the riots in D.C.?
That's when Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy died. So D.C.
were going crazy.
So they, we wake up one morning and we're falling out, and all of a sudden they rush us, get all your gear, get the Jeeps, get the trucks. And anyway, the whole convoy of the battalion, I don't know. I forget how many Jeeps, but there was a lot of them, 50, 70, something like that. And we went down to D.C. and we went into Fort Meade, and there was empty barracks there, and they kept us there for like a day or two. And then they fall out, you know, and we go to they issue us weapons, you know. I had a .45. All the other guys had M14s maybe, or M16s, I forget.
Probably they were going through that transition. Yeah.
And then we drove into D.C. and it was a hill overlooking D.C., an abandoned school. And the Jeeps were parked in the open field. And then we had access to the gym. And we just sat there and waited. And then we were told the next morning, two Jeeps were going to team up with a Washington, D.C. police car. So, and you could hear gunfire all night long, and it wasn't just sporadic, it was a lot of gunfire going, you know, so.
Yeah. Very difficult time.
A lot of guys got upset, especially the guys that were short. You only had maybe a month or 2 months to go. They had been in Vietnam a year.
Right. They're like, what am I doing here? Yeah, exactly.
I got through a year in Vietnam, and now I'm going to get shot in Washington, D.C. But
of all places.
Everything worked out, though. But that was pretty interesting.
That's some it's interesting times, especially the Hill-Kwala piece. I mean, especially it's very similar to what recently happened there, most recently, down at the Capitol and so forth.
But January 6th.
So tell us as time's going on now, during this time, I don't know how much more time you had left in the service. I mean, what were you plans for yourself, and what were you hearing maybe at the same time as information started to come back, more information about Tommy?
I was maybe 2 or 3 months before discharge, and then we started to hear rumors that he was put in for the Congressional Medal of Honor. And it might have been before he went to Fort Meade or afterwards. Anyway, there was maybe I had to go up to it was in Fort Meade, and I had to go to New York, and then they were having a ceremony in what's the fort by the
you got Fort Totten, you got Fort Hamilton.
Fort Hamilton, that's right, by the Verrazano.
Okay, yeah, Fort Mammoth over there in Jersey.
It's on the Brooklyn side, and they were awarding my brother the Distinguished Service Cross. So it was pretty impressive.
Okay.
They said you can invite everyone you want. And a military vehicle went to the old neighborhood, picked up my mother and father. And then I went out with other guys.
Nice.
And
okay.
When he said you can invite as many as you want, about 200 people show up, and all friends of mine and Tommy. And there was a one-star general there. And I wore my Class A uniforms, and I come over and I salute him, and he says, "Gee, I'm pleasantly surprised. I thought maybe he would have showed up in civilian clothes with all this going on." And he says, "I want to invite you and your parents and your friends back to the officers' club and for a couple of cocktails."
Oh, nice. Okay.
That might have been a mistake. They ran out of beer by the time the my buddies.
Yeah. Oh boy. Yeah, Fort Hamilton, a lot of history there also. So so it was during that time, how were you hearing this information about Tommy and the controversy? Was it coming through military chains? Was somebody communicating it through your father?
Yeah, through my father, and everything seemed to be vague. And then there was another kid from the neighborhood that had been in the same battalion, and saw him on a get back, and he says, your brother should have got the Medal of Honor. So I said, I don't know, you know how the military is, there's always something. So a number of years later now, my brother lives down in the villages in Florida. So it's St. Patrick's Day, and he's at a St. Patrick's Day dinner, and a couple walks in, and they're looking for a seat, and Kevin says, "Hey, sit at our table." So I start talking, and his name is John Maloney. And he's from Queens and Long Beach. And we were in Long Beach at the time. We didn't know him. Anyway, he said, Kevin says, "Hey, what are you doing? I'm looking to buy something." He says, "After the party's over, come back to my place. I'll show you my place, and I'll tell you what to look for and not, what to look out for." So he comes back, and as he walks in, there's a picture of my brother on a wall with the citation and the three medals he received. So this John Maloney said, "Gee, I was in Vietnam for a year and saw a lot of combat. What's the deal here?" "That's my brother," and he kept explaining to him. So they exchanged phone numbers.
Right.
And about 10 days later, Maloney calls Kevin and he says, "I hope you don't think I'm presumptuous, but I read about your brother. He should have got the Medal of Honor, I'm active in the VFW in Long Beach, and I presented it to the commander down here, and if it's all right with you, we want to try to pursue it." So we all agreed that was a good idea, and
Yeah, rightly so. Even myself, with my own research, I did read a lot of the documentation. It's a mystery why it wasn't. So go ahead, Jack, continue.
John Hussey got involved.
General John Hussey.
So I'm dealing with him, and he says, send away for a DD-638. And that's the first request for a medal that somebody sends in. So anyway, he comes back, and on it says he should get the Medal of Honor. So it's
right,
and it seemed like it went up the whole chain of command through the 25th Division to who's ever in charge of the Pacific at the time, and they all signed off to a point in his records that we received that said to receive the Medal of Honor and just sign here. And when it got up to the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and they knocked it down to the, I think the head of the Joint Chiefs is a guy by the name of General Wheeler, I think. Anyway, they knocked it down to the DSC, so nobody could understand why. So I started checking out things, and he was in Company C of this battalion, and 10 days before Tommy got killed, a young second lieutenant got killed. He threw himself on top of a hand grenade, and he got the Medal of Honor. So then maybe the speculation was we started handing them out to two guys in the same battalion 10 days apart. It kind of might diminish how we approach this. That was the only thing.
Which one shouldn't have anything to do with the other. It has nothing to do with the courage that Tommy showed.
But that was speculation. Doesn't seem to. And then when we reinstated it, we tracked down two guys that were there that day, and they both, the original three statements by three of the guys there described what Tommy did. And then he found two guys that were alive, and they corroborated everything that happened to a point. One guy was saying
they supported the statements.
Major.
Okay.
The captain, when he got shot, Tommy ran across an open field and administered first aid and then protected him with his own body enough to where he was revived.
Yeah, Captain Rakowski,
He could call an artillery and air support. And he said, if I didn't regain consciousness, there were so many other officers dead, they wouldn't, the whole company would have been overrun, So, So anyway, when the other guy got killed, maybe that was the reason, I don't know. But anyway, when a review came, it went to a review board of one-star generals, and they said there's something there. And then it went up to three-star generals, and they said they agreed that it should have been the DSC. Maybe they didn't want to make their predecessors look bad by making a mistake. I don't know if that's another...
Which could be the case, and unfortunately, being that I'm still active in the Army, just for the audience, I cannot legally comment on the reasons why. But I can make my opinion right here that after myself looking at the facts, it would blow my mind not knowing why Tommy Mineau was not awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor. I can say that. Now, I don't know what was happening at these the awards review board. I don't have that information. I can't speak and I can't represent the DOD, but I can comment, like I said, and I'll reemphasize that. Looking at everything and just hearing Jack talk here, Tommy was definitely deserving of that Medal of Honor. And some part of me is still hopeful that some clearer minds will take a second look at this. I hope so. But what else can you tell us about anything further down the road that happened?
This whole review and everything, it brings back a lot of memories and everything, and you hope it goes through, but it doesn't. But the only positive thing that came out of it is that a lot of nephews and nieces and extended family knew that Tommy died, but they didn't know all the details. So all the paperwork that was coming back and all the research, we were passing on to our friends and family. So now these younger kids in the family, like I said, nieces and nephews, and even their nieces and nephews know all the details, which I thought is important, and that was a positive thing that came out.
Absolutely. Definitely to keep his memory alive. Yeah, absolutely. And I know at even one point it even got to Congressman King, and he was he was a little baffled too why it wasn't going forth.
I'll pass on that one. We needed, when the review board came up again, we needed somebody to sign off on it. Went to Senator Schumer, and he jumped into it unbelievably. His whole staff was involved. I spoke to him personally.
Okay.
And he was good. Top shelf as far as helping. And so.
So extremely. He's very supportive. Okay, that's good. Yeah. I mean, my opinion alone, just, the statements from Captain Ronald Murkowski, and that was the one that Tommy, sacrificed his life for, alone sets the stage right there to support it. There's no silver lining here. Hopefully it will be one day. I'm hopeful. And I've kind of... This story kind of reminds me, but I don't know if yourself or a few others in the audience have seen the most recently The Last Greatest Measure with the Air Force NCO, same situation in Vietnam that was eventually awarded the Medal of Honor down the road when clearer heads prevailed and looked at the stories. And it helped bring a lot of closure, especially for a lot of the ones that were surrounding that situation. It's tough. It's a tough situation.
The only other thing that's going on where he's going to get some play is you read that, The Greatest Beer Run Ever.
Yeah, Chickie Donahue. And then just for the audience, I wanted to pass this out. Chickie Donahue was a merchant marine who Jack knows very well, and he wrote a book recently. It's called The Greatest Beer Run Ever. And just to summarize a little bit, and Jack, you can help add to it, Chickie was a merchant marine, and during the height of the Vietnam War, Chickie was in a bar along with a lot of people from the old neighborhoods, and they wanted to do something to help support the boys that were over there in combat in Vietnam, renownedly Tommy Minot. And Chickie went and took a trip, and it's a great story how he got on his ship, a merchant marine, and went around and eventually found his way over to Vietnam to find the catch up with some of. I don't believe he found all of them, but he caught up with a lot of the individuals. Yeah, about four or five. He found his way through Vietnam, through a lot of it. And it's interesting. I would, encourage anybody in the audience to read this book. It's out there on Amazon. You can listen to it as well. But Chickie goes out there to bring, beer from the old neighborhood and, just to show their sign of support for these individuals. It's an amazing story in itself.
When a ship landed, it was a munition ship. So he was getting double money, which was good. I guess it's more dangerous on a munition ship. So the ship is going to lay over 3 days and leave. So as soon as it docks, now everyone on the ship is nervous. And, hey, Donnie, what are you going to do? I said, I've been out to sea for 30 days. I'm going to find a place where I can get a drink. So he sees an MP there with a three...
I believe that was Tommy Collins, right?
So he meets Collins.
Yeah,
Somebody told me this story years ago. I'd say, that's BS. But all four guys that I met, I know them. And there's pictures of Chickie up on a DMZ with this guy, Ricky Dugan, from the 1st Cavalry Division. And now he's in civilian clothes. So somebody says, I know what you are. You're CIA. You're with the company. So he picks up on it right away. So nobody's in civilian clothes there.
And they're thinking he's a CIA agent over there.
I got to get up to landing zone Zebra. And that's where Ricky Dugan was. What he got up there? You know what I got up there, that type of stuff. He's pretty glib. So when he gets up there, and by the time he gets back to where the ship has left. So now he hitchhikes down to Saigon. He knew there was a couple of buddies down there. And... he's in Saigon. He goes to the embassy, and all he had was sea papers. So to get out of the country, he needed a passport. So they issue him a passport, and they said, all right, come back in 2 days, and we'll make arrangements for you to... He had a ship lined up in the Philippines, and he was going to get a flight to the Philippines. And then a Tet Offensive hit, So now you're stuck in Saigon, then.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's an amazing story how, and I call it, especially somebody with good street smarts, they know how to make their way through a crazy environment, which he did. And lo and behold, in the middle of all this for the audience, the Tet Offensive hits, which really complicates the situation for him.
Then now they're making a movie out of it.
And rightly so. And I think that'd be great. And I think you mentioned some of the actors you heard that.
They just changed. Zac Efron is going to play Chicky.
Okay. Yeah, I know Zac.
What? Russell Crowe. Part of the movie, he's dealing with a reporter in Saigon. So Russell Crowe is playing the reporter, and Bill.
One of the scenes at the beginning is
they're in a bar, and this guy, the Colonel, is. Bill Murray's playing the Colonel. So
great.
So Chicky's a bit of a character, you know. He got into the Sandhogs after he got out of the Merchant Marines, and there was an accelerated program up at Harvard, public administration. So he applied to it. Meanwhile, all he had was a GED diploma from the Marine Corps. So when he applies, they said, "You don't even have an undergraduate degree. How do you expect to?" He says, "Just let me in, and I'll do it." But he was the political guy for the Sandhogs Union, so he knew a lot of politicians. So Moynihan was alive at the time, and Ted Kennedy, and I wrote letters. Anyway, he goes to Harvard for a year with a GED diploma and no undergraduate. He has a master's degree from Harvard. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. I mean, that's an accomplishment.
So the other thing, he calls the one of the writers for the movie. And he says, "I want to be like Alfred Hitchcock." You know, Hitchcock, he used to be in every movie he made. He always did a cameo in the background. So
Yes. He was somewhere whether it was the birds.
So he says to this guy, "I want to be like Hitchcock. I want a cameo shot." And the guy's, "What are you talking about?" And then he tells about Hitchcock always being in every one of his movies. He says, "All right." He says, "Yeah, and put me at that bar scene with the colonel is screaming about someone going to Vietnam." He says, "All right." He says, "All right, Chicky, you got it." He says, "No, I need more." He says, "What's that?" "I want my buddy with me, Jack Minogue." So that's when they were going to shoot in the States. Now they're going to shoot in New Zealand. So,
that's going to be great.
My wife is hoping that it's still a go and I'm going to be in a bar scene for 10 seconds. And then
that'll be great. I think it, you know, I'm hopeful it will.
And then she'll get a trip to New Zealand.
Absolutely. That's a long trip, but that'd be a nice trip there. You know, so it looks good. So, Well, Jack, thanks for sharing a lot of these stories. Now, for the audience, before we close this out, on May 31st this year, 2021. We're going to be holding a ceremony, and I'm going to give the address here. It's going to be at 25 Baden Place Road, Farmingdale, New York. I'd like to have more time before the ceremony kicks on, and we'll talk more the details for this. But again, we have a joint complex reserve center here in New York, and this building is going to be renamed in honor of Tommy Minogue. And it's going to be a large event. Jack will be there. I believe Chicky Donahue is coming as well. General Hussey and several others. And we're keeping our fingers crossed that Senator Schumer can make his way down here as well. But it's going to be a great event. And I want to send an invite out to all the audience who has a possibility to do that. It's going to be a great event itself. And it's supposed to start off around 11 o'clock, but I'll get more details. But again, just for the audience, it's going to be at the Farmingdale Reserve Center, 25 Baden Place Road, Farmingdale, New York. And that's going to be on May 31st, Memorial Day, approximately 11 o'clock ceremony. Well, Jack, I thanks for sharing, again, Tommy's story and a lot of these good stories and stuff. And I sure hope you can join us back here one more time right before the ceremony. Sure. We'd like to talk there, too. And I also like to do, Jack, is, you know, eventually in the future, I'm looking to do a series of podcasts. I'm going to invite several people on different ones. I want to do a history of the unions here, especially in the New York area. I'd love to have you at that time.
What about Chicky?
Chicky, too. I'd love to bring Chicky as well. I don't know Chicky. I think you do, Jack. And I would love to have Chicky on the show. Okay. I would love to talk about that.
All right, John. That'd be great talking to you, and have a nice Easter.